This talk is offered by Ordinary Mind Zendo. Ordinary Mind was founded by Barry Magid, Dharma heir of Charlotte Joko Beck, and is dedicated to her vision of a psychologically minded Zen practice adapted to the needs of American students practicing in the context of their everyday lives. Our public programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
When we discuss the life of the sixth patriarch, as told by Kazan in the Transmission of the Light, we're examining an idealized picture of a Zen master, one that may be partially or even totally fictional, in an attempt to describe this kind of ideal of a teacher at a certain time in a certain place. And whether or not the account is fictional or not, what is true is that these are the qualities that were idealized. This is the kind of story that people wanted to tell and believe in terms of what they thought a Zen master in China in those days would have been like. And so even apart from the content of the story or teachings, the teachings that are described as the Platform Sutra, teachings of the Sixth Patriarch, we can just look at the kinds of characteristics that were being idealized and try to use them to think about how they have changed or not in the last 1,000 years, and what it is that we now imagine a teacher looks like, what we imagine enlightenment means, what we imagine this practice will culminate in our own lives or in the lives of those that we take as an example. And in the case of the sixth patriarch, we begin with the things that he's not. And primarily, he's not a scholar, he's not a monk, he's not even literate. In some sense, he is what we would later call a natural man, right? A person who is poor, uneducated, lived as a manual laborer, a woodcutter. And yet one day, just by chance, overhearing a sutra, he has complete understanding. And so this kind of story tells you that what they're trying to look for is someone who is not part of an intellectual elite, who's not part of a Brahmin class, right? That whatever is being valued and transmitted is available to anyone of any social class. How true was that then? How true is it now, right? Who has the opportunity or the leisure to study? How important is study and learning the scriptures or learning the koans or learning the old texts? how central is that to this practice or to achieving realization? The picture of him, again, as I say, is a natural man, is one that I think we carry forward in a lot of subtle ways when we use different kinds of metaphors to describe what kind of state we think awakening is, right? The beginning of everyday Zen, Joko says, my dog doesn't worry about the meaning of life, right? So you immediately have this sense of the simplicity of animal nature, right? Not being worried by foolish philosophical ideas, right? In a certain sense, it's very parallel to the six patriarchs being illiterate. The dog exemplifies the absence of intellectual preoccupation. Yeah, my dog, you know, if chicken falls off the table, the dog will try to grab the chicken, drag it under the bed, and eat the whole damn thing, bones and all, and probably eat himself to death, right? Dog has no self-restraint, no sense of self-regulation, no idea at all what's good for him, right? He just knows there's food, grab it, right? Dogs at a certain time evolve to have that instinct. In a time of scarcity, you gorged yourself whatever you could. But the expression, sick as a dog, also sort of indicates that dogs aren't very discriminating about what they'll eat off the side of the road. Don't know how to take care of themselves in a certain sense, right? So when Joko says, my dog doesn't worry about the meaning of life, she's sort of zeroing in a kind of one-dimensional, idealized picture of the naturalness of an animal, right? In the same way, when you zero in on the illiteracy of the sixth patriarch, you don't think of illiteracy being also often joined with prejudice or narrow-mindedness or just plain ignorance of the world and other people and how things function, right? It's supposed to be the illiteracy of an open-minded blank slate, right? Well, sometimes that's one dimension, but it's rarely the whole picture. Another image that we often use is childlike. This comes especially for us in a kind of post-romantic period of, you know, Blake and Wordsworth, and feeling like the child is, again, like the sixth patriarch, unsullied by intellectual preoccupations. The child is open and natural and spontaneous and creative, right? Walking down here the other day, I walked by a mother wheeling a child in a stroller. Child was screaming bloody murder, right? Just having an absolute tantrum, right? Flailing and yelling and carrying on, right? perfectly childlike, right? Again, like the dog, having no capacity for self-regulation, being all reactivity and impulse, right? In a certain sense, that's spontaneous, right, and natural. It's not exactly what we're aiming for. Again, so often we take an image, turn it into a metaphor, and sort of narrow it down to one dimension and sort of say, ah, that's it, right? We get ourselves in a lot of trouble whenever we try to create an image of awakening, enlightenment, the true self. Joko said, the true self isn't something at all. It's the absence of something. Even there, you get into this question of what are we going to subtract? Is it this cognitive part? Is it reactivity? Whatever, right? But in fact, a big part of what we're looking at is the capacity to leave everything alone, which turns out to be a capacity that has to be developed and practiced. Joko called it building a bigger container. In that sense, in that self-regulatory sense, leaving everything alone is very hard because our inclination, like the baby in the carriage, is to react very strongly to things that are uncomfortable. And we react very strongly, trying to escape them, change them, protest them, whatever, right? The capacity to do nothing is not nothing. Right? It's really something that is built up very slowly with a great deal of discipline and maturity and support in the world. The sixth patriarch presents a picture of immediate understanding that in a sense nothing needs to be changed, nothing needs to be fixed. Famously he says, what need is there to wipe the mirror clean of dust? Right? From the beginning the mirror is empty, the dust is empty, nothing is there to be contaminated. And yet, even though the rice is already white, it needs to be sifted. You need to put this into practice. See, it's this kind of actualization of doing nothing, right? It's this strange practice of leaving everything alone. To leave everything alone in the six patriarch sense is to see the emptiness of all things. We can say that in a more experienced, near way by saying we don't take anything personally, right? Joko's version of that was her parable of the empty rowboat, which I gather was not originally hers, but I forget who she took it from. I think I share that quality with her of picking up stories someplace, forgetting where I stole them from, and assuming eventually that it was mine originally, right? But for her, you know, there's this story of you're off in a lake rowing along and all of a sudden another rowboat bangs into you. And you st- start cursing. Who's the idiot who ran into my boat? And then you turn around and you see, oh, it's an empty boat. It got on board and drifted away and banged into me. There's nobody there to yell at. Sort of a paradigm of, there's nothing to take personally here. There's just things happening moment after moment, right? This is one way to describe the experience of emptiness, right? Nothing has a kind of personal about you substance to it, right? But that capacity to just experience things moment after moment is the hard work of a disciplined practice. You know, Joko's other description of enlightenment, of not taking things personally, was, would it be okay with you if you lost all your arms and legs, if you lost your job, if you were homeless, right? Just this whole list of catastrophes, right? And her notion of enlightenment is not being in some blissful state. It means, can you say, if all these things happen, this is life as it is. This is me. This is what it is, right? A very high bar that's being set for that realization of just this. Yeah. A teacher like the sixth patriarch, or like me, or like anybody, both embodies a kind of ideal that people aspire to, and at the same time goes against the grain of people's expectations and fantasies. When the sixth patriarch was given the robe and the bowl by his teacher, the monks of the monastery were outraged. How can you give transmission to this bumpkin who's never once sat in the Zendo with us? Never practiced. All he's done is been out in the rice shed pounding away at the rice. He was just a worker, right? He was not ordained. He wasn't sitting zazen. He wasn't coming to any services. He was just working in the back. And he's the guy you give transmission to, right? In one sense, he's being presented as an ideal in his simplicity and the immediacy of his realization. But another, he's being shown as the kind of exemplar of how far a teacher can be from our idealized picture of what we want. You know, in that case, people wanted a monk. They wanted somebody who had paid his dues, who had been part of the community. So these stories are really valuable for us to read, not because we're going to take on the qualities that they have in there, but because they're really all about our assumptions, all about the pictures we carry around of what does enlightenment look like, what does a teacher look like, what do we expect of ourselves.